All right. Welcome to the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee. I'll call the meeting to order. And Representative Petersburg, you had a chance to review the minutes of March 25th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes of March 25th as presented.
Representative Petersburg moved the minutes of March 25th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion prevails. Members, today we're going to present House File 4. Our calendar for the upcoming meetings will be today we'll go through the presentation of the bill. We will present DE2 amendment to that right away, so we get it in the form that I'd like to present it in. Then tomorrow we will be having public testimony on the bill, and then we will be meeting on Monday. Are we at regular times tomorrow and Monday?
Monday we're going to do noon. Tomorrow 12:45, right?
Tomorrow is 12:45. Okay. So tomorrow will be 12:45, and then
3:15.
To 3:15, and then Monday will be noon. So that is our. Okay. Also, thank you. Amendments will also be due noon on Friday for Monday's meeting. Any questions on just the format and where we're headed? All right.
Yes, where are we headed?
You're about to hear, Representative Earhart.
Chair Kelly, would you like to move your bill, House File 4?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 4, and I would ask that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Today, I believe we'll be laying the bill, on the table to address it throughout the next couple days. But that's the eventual path will be to Ways and Means.
Chair Kelly has moved House File 4, and I believe there is a DE2 amendment. Would you like to also move that amendment?
Yes, at this time, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the DE2 amendment.
Are there any other discussions? If not, all in favor of the DE2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. So we now have in front of us the DE2 amendment, and Chair Kelly, if you would like to present this bill and tell us all good things that are in it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee. First of all, certainly, as we all know, the majority of the work is done by a very, very competent staff, and certainly appreciate all of their help. Our committee assistants, Mr. Marble, Ms. Cicchini, Matt Burris and Andy Lee, along with Brian Perro, our research staff, could not have done anything close to this work without their help. So certainly thank all of their efforts. Today we're going to walk through a spreadsheet. Mr. Lee is going to assist us with that, along with Mr. Burris, as we walk through the bill. This isn't a day for a lot of grandstanding or anything. I would just like to highlight some of the things that we've done throughout the time period. From the start, what we asked for in House File 4 was time to walk through the process and to understand where we were at, understand the need, and to put together a sustainable transportation package. I think that was the key word as we were asked throughout the last several months and even the last year, is to come up with a sustainable transportation package where people felt that our roads and bridges, our infrastructure, our transit system has maybe been put on the back burner for a while. So that was the goal. And with that, our goal was to be able to do that in such a fashion that we put together dedicated funding sources to meet that need. And in that vein, to do so all without raising taxes. We all know we're in a situation right now of a close to $2 billion surplus. I believe the state of Minnesota has been taxed enough at this point in time, and we can prioritize, which we did as a as a committee, and I know all committee members here think of transportation in that way. And so we prioritized and said the transportation is in need right now, and this bill addresses that. Over the next 10 years, we are providing $7 billion increase in transportation without raising the gas tax, the sales tax, or increasing any fees. So to that end, I would like to start out now with walking through the spreadsheet with Mr. Lee. We will, I would suggest, Mr. Chair, that we can certainly stop to answer questions as we go. We just have to be cognizant of the fact that we have until committee time is done at 2:30. So if that ends, we'll start, Mr. Lee.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, I will start out if you go to your packet and pull out the spreadsheets.
Would you state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff.
Thank you. Proceed.
So, Mr. Chair and members, if you go in your packets and pull out the spreadsheets, there is one large spreadsheet that looks like this. That's the appropriation spreadsheet, and that walks through all the appropriations in Articles 1 and 2 of the DE2 amendment that has been added onto House File 4. There are a number of smaller tables that I will be referring to explain some of the numbers in the appropriations sheet. So to start off, there's one table that looks like this. It says House File 4, DE2, tax, general fund, and one-time items. So to kind of start from a high level, there's two parts of this bill. In Article 3, there are various tax provisions that were heard in this committee and in taxes that dedicate parts of the general sales tax or specific taxes that go into the general fund to various components in transportation. And they go through a fund, a newly created fund called the Transportation Stability Fund. Then in Article 1 and 2, those funds that are now available to various transportation funds are spent. So it's kind of a two-part process.
Mr. Chair, I would like to speak to exactly what Mr. Lee is getting into. Article 3 specifically, for those who are thinking that this is going to be sent to taxes, is actually going to Ways and Means. On Monday, Article 3 will actually be stripped out of this bill. But for purposes of understanding the money flow right now of the ins and outs, we felt it was much easier to understand. So that's why we're walking through it in this regard. But I wanted all of the members to understand that.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, so on this one-page summary sheet, it shows the different components of the general fund sales tax that would be moving to transportation funds. And the largest item on line two is a part of the general sales tax that is applied to auto parts. This is not a sales tax that is applied to automotive repair labor. There is an exemption, but this is rather parts that apply to automobiles. And that is distributed to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, which is the constitutional fund that then distributes to the Trunk Highway Fund, the County Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Street Fund. Then there are two tax items that start in fiscal years 18-19 that apply to the tax on rental vehicles. And there's kind of two taxes that are applied to rental vehicle transactions. The first is the general state sales tax at 6.5%, and that goes into the general fund. And then there's an additional 9.2% that's also applied to rental transactions. And so on line 3, the 6.5%, which starts in fiscal 18, about $19 million a year, goes to for the Metropolitan Council for Transit Capital Improvements as decided by the legislature. And then on line 4, the 9.2% portion of the tax goes to small cities. And these are cities that currently do not receive municipal state aid street funds, but are not townships, so they are incorporated cities. Then line 5 and 6 are allocating the general fund a portion of the motor vehicle lease sales tax. So currently the motor vehicle lease sales tax gets the general fund gets the first $32 million of those funds, and then everything in addition to that gets split 50-50 between the five metropolitan counties that receive street aid from that, and Greater Minnesota Transit. And so what line 5 and 6 would do is it would break out the general fund portion, that $32 million, or a portion of that, to those two funds. So in a sense, that's Article 3, and I'll be going into the one-time funding items in the appropriations sheet. And so now moving on to the tracking sheet, this one. This is where the spending for some of those items occurs, in addition to kind of the normal biennial change item spending. So on the first page, the first change item on line 10 is an additional appropriation for airports. This is out of the state airports fund, collected on airport property tax, aircraft registration, and aircraft fuel. This spends down about a $15 million balance in the fund, and spends $11 million of that in the 16-17 biennium, and it is a governor's recommendation. And I'm sorry, just to explain kind of how this spreadsheet works, on the change item is are listed on the left-hand side in bold and italicized, and then the non-bolded items are the base appropriations. And so there's a comparison between the previous biennium, the base budget, the governor's recommendations, and House File 4 DE2. Then moving on, the next change item is on line 19, agency management aeronautics shift. This is shifting $25,000 from MnDOT agency management in the aeronautics fund to aeronautics. Currently, the MnDOT agency management area gets $25,000 for their costs incurred relating to aviation, and there's a governor's recommendation to just shift that to aeronautics. And then I will note on lines 21 and 22, there are a number of these change items that shift trunk highway spending in different components of MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety to general fund, but only in the fiscal 18 and 19 biennium. So as you can see on line 21 and 22, there's a reduction in trunk highway and an addition in general fund. So essentially the reduction eliminates the base appropriation on line 16 of the trunk highway funds that go to MnDOT Aeronautics. Then moving on to line 34, there's a change item. This is a little bit complicated, but there's a number of different components that go into this number. Currently, the motor vehicle sales tax that is collected on motor vehicle purchases, the 40% of that goes for transit. And within that 40%, 90% goes to metropolitan area transit, and 10% goes to Greater Minnesota Transit. That's a statutory appropriation, meaning that if the legislature does not act, that appropriation just happens. What this changes is it makes that statutory appropriation into a direct appropriation, which means that the legislature authorizes that constitutionally dedicated spending for those purposes. Since it is constitutionally dedicated, it couldn't be spent on anything other than transit, but it just spends it here rather than repeals the statutory language.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kornstein.
So to that point, if we make this change this year, is it then permanent or one time in terms of that language?
Mr. Lee or Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kornstein, it would be permanent unless the legislature would decide to change it in a subsequent legislative session. But essentially what it would do is it would build into the base that it's a statutory, or that it's a direct appropriation rather than a statutory appropriation.
Representative Horsey. Mr. Lee, continue.
OK.
Okay, and then moving on to the next change item on line 35 and 36. Again, this is moving a trunk highway-funded component of MnDOT into the general fund in the transit area. Moving on to the next page, line 49, there's another change item that eliminates the $500,000 a year for the commuter and passenger rail office in MnDOT. And then moving to the next change items.
Mr. Lee, it wasn't Safe Routes to School. Isn't that also additional? That's bolded.
Mr. Chair, line 43, that's the base appropriation for Safe Routes to School. There's no change.
All right. Well, I just thought it was bolded. Thanks. Thank you. Continue on.
So the next change items are on lines 61 and 62. Again, this is a shift in the trunk highway funded portion of MnDOT freight office from the trunk highway fund to the general fund. And then finally, from in the multimodal area on lines 63 and 64, there are two items that are being funded through the freight office. One is a $5 million grant for port development assistance. This is generally a bonding program within MnDOT, and that is funded out of the special revenue fund in driver and vehicle services from the vehicle services account. And again, from the vehicle services account, a rail safety improvement program called that members may know as MRSI is being funded at a $5 million level. Then moving on to state roads on page 3. So again, just to note that on line 79, that's the base appropriation for operations and maintenance. So that is kind of what the starting point. The two house change items here is on line 83, reduces operations and maintenance by $65 million a year, but then creates a new base on line 88 to fund that program. And essentially what this does is it moves snow and ice removal from being a kind of a activity within the operations and maintenance appropriation and makes it its separate item. Then on line 84, there is the increase for operations and maintenance, and those numbers are identical to the governor's recommendations. Moving on to program planning and delivery, there are a number of changes here. The first is on line 95, Environmental Management Fund, that increases the allocation from the Trunk Highway Fund for program planning and delivery by $1 million a year. And I will note on line 96, there's the 2002 flood appropriation day change that is only in the governor's recommendation. However, there's a little bit of nuance to this because in the governor's recommendation, this is an increase to program planning and delivery, whereas the language is in the House bill. However, it is basically MnDOT can use its existing program planning and delivery money for those purposes, but it is not an increase to cover that change. And then on line 97, you'll see a increase in fiscal 16 and decreases in subsequent years to program planning and delivery. And this, what this effectively does is it makes the program planning and delivery appropriation within MnDOT 15% of the total state road appropriation for fiscal 16, and then reduces it to 14% in fiscal 17, 13% in fiscal 18, and 12% in fiscal 19. So those are the additions or reductions that are necessary to get it to that level. And that's, so basically it 15% and then decreasing by a percent a year of state road spending in the Trunk Highway Fund, so that's in operations and maintenance, program planning and delivery, and state road construction, subtracting out debt service. Then the next change item on line 98 is similar to the snow and ice removal one. That is subtracting about $30 million from program planning and delivery for statewide planning and creating a new base item that's kind of broken out from operations and maintenance on line 104. Finally, in state roads, there are two change items. Line 111 is governor's recommendation. This spends federal funds available to MnDOT that was in addition to the ones that they had already planned for. And then on line 112, this is additional trunk highway spending for state roads. And this comes from a number of sources, one piece of it being the general fund sales tax changes, another piece of it being spending unreserved fund balance within the trunk highway fund, and then the next piece in fiscal 18 and 19 being spending trunk highway dollars that used to be spent on other components of MnDOT but are now being spent on state road construction. Those were essentially the ones that are freed up by the general fund taking spending in those areas.
Could we take a minute here, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you would clarify, Mr. Lee, if you could clarify what that's replacing, what's being reduced.
You said there's three sources, from the sales tax, the unreserved funds, and then from some money that you help me. I lost track. So.
Correct. So,
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, so that is the result of the reductions that I mentioned earlier. I'm trying to look for examples on page 1, lines 21 and 22, lines 35 and 36, and then there's more in agency management. If you skip ahead here to agency management, page 6, lines 181 and 182. And to perhaps help kind of conceptualize this a little bit better than just the appropriation spreadsheet, there's another single standalone sheet in your packet that is titled Trunk Highway Fund Balance Spending. And on line 20 of that sheet, it says MnDOT Agency Management Shift. That's the total of all the MnDOT components that are currently trunk highway funded that under this proposal would move to the general fund. And so those trunk highway dollars would then be allocated to state road construction.
Representative Johnson? Mr. Lee, if you could continue.
Okay, moving back then to page 4. Line 121. This is a appropriation, an additional appropriation to pay trunk highway debt service. This supports $1.3 billion in trunk highway bonding. That's in Article 2, and those bonds are issued and authorized over a 10-year period in $200 million increments, except in the last year in $100 million increments. That is in comparison to line 120, which is the debt service cost for the governor's proposed $2 billion trunk highway bond authorization. Moving on to line 129, the Roosevelt Tower replacement. This is spending $32,000 in the vehicle services account to replace the Roosevelt Tower. And then on line 130 and 131, that is the moving the trunk highway funded components of MnDOT to the general fund in fiscal 18 and 19. Moving on to local roads on page 5. On line 150, this is one-time spending from the general fund that is transferred to, it's from the general fund in fiscal 15, but is transferred to the county state aid road fund, that $128.4 million. And then on line 151, this is the net of the increase for the auto parts moving into HUTD and that portion that then flows through to the counties, in addition to the approximately $14 million dedication of the motor vehicle lease sales tax for the five metropolitan counties. That's appropriated out in the CASA appropriation. Moving on to municipal state aid street, on line 161, that is the one-time funding from the $200 million. And 162 is the increase that's the result of the auto parts. And one other item on that page is the small cities appropriation on line 166. That is $25 million a year for fiscal 16 and 17, and that is spending from $50 million from the general fund spending from fiscal 15, and I'll kind of note that at the end of the spreadsheet. And then you can see the base is set at 27.5 and 27.9. That is the estimate for the 9.2% of the automotive rental tax that currently goes to the general fund.
Why are you smiling?
Mr. Lee, continue.
Mr. Chair and members, on lines 181 and 182, that is the general fund shift from MnDOT agency management from trunk highway fund to general fund starting in fiscal 18-19. And again, to note on line 179, that is the $25,000 that is the governor's recommendation of the aeronautics fund that is shifting from, or that instead of being spent in agency management, is instead being spent in aeronautics. And again, to note on line 193 and 194, that is the general fund taking over from the trunk highway fund in fiscal 18 and 19 for MnDOT buildings. Finally, for MnDOT on line 200, the tort claims shift. This is a appropriation that is shifting from Minnesota management and budget to MnDOT agency management, and it is to pay tort claims. So, and it is also a governor's recommendation. Moving on then to the Metropolitan Council on page 7. At this point, I think it might be useful to go to another spreadsheet in your packet. And that is titled Metropolitan Council State General Fund Appropriation and Motor Vehicle Sales Tax Revenue. Looks like this. So on the top table, this shows the history, some history, and the base funding scenario for the Metropolitan Council transit operations. And largely, it's funded through two areas. One is a general fund appropriation that the current base is $76.6 million a year. And in addition, it is it receives 36% of the motor vehicle sales tax allocation. And so if you look on line 2, that's that amount. and in the chart, that's the darker shade of gray on the bottom. The general fund appropriation and the motor vehicle sales tax appropriations currently behave a little bit differently. The general fund appropriation is directly appropriated, meaning that the legislature authorizes a level every 2 years, whereas the motor vehicle sales tax appropriation is statutorily appropriated, like the MnDOT, Greater Minnesota Transit piece of that tax. So there's a number of different pieces that the House File 2 DE or House File 4 DE2 would do. The first one would be on line of the appropriation spreadsheet 222. It would turn the statutory appropriation for the Metropolitan Council into a direct appropriation. So that's where that, for the biennium, about $550 million would be. Now, in speaking with the Met Council and thinking through the spreadsheet, that appropriate or that amount would go to the Metropolitan Council absent any action. So under the governor's plan or even the base plan, that would happen. But just to note that in the difference that what the House is doing here is it's making a direct appropriation rather than a statutory appropriation. And then there's a reduction to the Metropolitan Council General Fund appropriation that's on line 221 of the appropriation spreadsheet. And I can walk through how those numbers were arrived at. The reduction for fiscal 16 of $43 million is the combination of $14.8 million in a growth in the motor vehicle sales tax between forecast between fiscal 15 and 16, and about $28 million, if you go back to the one-page spreadsheet on the Metropolitan Council online, 24 and 25, in bill language that would require the county's Transit Improvement Board to fund 100% of the operating subsidy after passenger fares and federal funds of transitways. So currently the Met Council funds transitways with $20 million or $20.9 million forecast for fiscal 16 from the state general fund appropriation that it gets, and $7.5 million from its invest funds. So essentially what would happen is CTIB would cover that amount, and the state general fund would be reduced proportionally. So the net effect would be to hold the Metropolitan Council at the funding level from the state's perspective at fiscal 15 levels for fiscal 16 and 17. And the chart on lines 34 through 47 kind of shows how that would work. So the net effect would be to phase out the general fund appropriation for the Metropolitan Council, which you can see on line 221 of the appropriation spreadsheet. So that reduces $110 million in the 16-17 biennium, and the forecast growth of invest and the requirement of CTIB would zero out the general fund appropriation in 18-19. Then there's some other smaller change items for the Metropolitan Council on line 223, the suburban transit pilot project that would pass through the Metropolitan Council. That is $3 million over the biennium from the special revenue driver and vehicle services fund. And finally, $400,000 over the biennium for travel demand management organizations, also from the Vehicle Services Fund.
Mr. Lee, I think we do have another question. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the thing you just referenced, the Suburban Connections Demonstration Project, I'm looking at the language on page 15 of the bill. And starting on 15, line 15.5, the Met Council shall provide financial assistance to suburban transit providers in an amount that equals the total assistance identified in the unified budget, plus, and then the following paragraph, the amount under clause 1 multiplied by a percentage calculated as the total amount in the metropolitan area transit account for fiscal year 2016 and 17, as appropriate, less the total amount in that account for the previous fiscal year divided by the total amount in that account for the previous fiscal year. What in the heck does that mean? And the question, the further question about that is, how, I mean, it sounds like we're giving them more money, but how does that relate then to subdivision 3 that follows, which is the Suburban Connections Demonstration Project, the 1.5? Is that in addition to the 1.5?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I defer to Mr. Burris on that.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I'll take your second question first. Yes, that is, both of those provisions are additional funds, in effect, to suburban transit providers, but they're separate provisions. So the first one that you had read captures a percentage share of the motor vehicle sales tax growth. So under that rider from 15.5 through to 15.21, the suburban transit providers would receive the same amount that they are set to receive this year in the calendar year 15 operating budget of the Met Council, plus an amount that's based on the growth in MVEST in each of fiscal years 2016 and 2017. And then starting on 15.22, there's an additional total of $3 million for the suburban connections demonstration. And that part is one-time dollars for this biennium.
And so, Mr. Chair, for audience members, if you haven't tracked, though it sounds like suburban transit, it does not go to all suburbs. It goes to a very limited group of suburbs, so it's not comprehensive. So does the spreadsheet, just given what you just described about CTIP, you just went through that transfer, can I tell anywhere here how much we are cutting basic Metro Transit bus service over the next
Mr. Lee or Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, no, the spreadsheet would not reflect that. Essentially, the Metropolitan Council would get a certain amount of general fund and a certain amount of invest and have requirements in how that's spent, but they would have to determine how to fund their budget going from that point.
Representative Hausman?
Meaning, in other words, if they want to run a level of bus service as we have now, they would have to do property taxes?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, currently the Metropolitan Council is allowed to levy a property tax to support capital improvements, mostly bus replacements. I would have to check with Mr. Burris, but I don't believe that the Metropolitan Council could levy property tax to cover transitway operating subsidy, but I would want to defer to Mr. Burris on that.
Chair Kelly or Mr. Burris?
Yes. If I could add, though, Representative Hausman, I think this sheet is important as well, because there are no actual cuts to the Met Council budget. We're simply taking the increase from the MVEST funds, and we're reducing that amount of increase from the general fund. So if you look at the graph there, they're held harmless in regards to what they're operating with right now. And in fact, if you go to 19, you see a slight increase again, because once again, they'll get the increase on the MVEST dollars.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kelly, I think what I'm connecting it to is also the discussion on page 15. If we are giving both of those items additionally to suburban transit, lines 15.5 to 15.21 and the demonstration project 1.5, clearly that's coming from somewhere. So, and I'm assuming it has to come from general Metro Transit bus service.
Representative Kelly or Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, that $3 million, for example, is coming from actually the DBS fund that we've talked about. So that's not being asked to come from the Met Council budget.
And Mr. Chair, the lines 15.5 to 15.21?
Chair Kelly?
Yeah.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, yes, that would be one of the uses that the Met Council would be required to put under the appropriations that they receive. So a portion of the state appropriations to the Met Council would have to go towards the suburban transit providers, and this is the calculation for the amounts.
Representative Hausman? Linda? Great. Thank you. Mr. Lee, if you'd like to continue.
yes, Mr. Chair. Moving on to the Department of Public Safety, on page 7 of the appropriation spreadsheets, lines 238 and 239 are taking the governor's recommendations for base increases within administration and related services, and that's pulling from both the general fund and the trunk highway fund. But I will note that on line 240 and 241, that is taking the trunk highway funded portion of Department of Public Safety, admin and related services, and moving into the general fund in 18 and 19. Moving on to public safety support. Again, this is a operating adjustment on line 251, taking the governor's recommended operating adjustment from the general fund, and on 253 from the trunk highway fund. But again, on lines 254, 255, and 256, moving the trunk highway and HUTD funded portions of DPS public safety support into the general fund. Moving on to technology and support services, again, the same shift in 267, 268, and 269. Moving on to State Patrol on page 9. On 286 is the governor's recommended increase from the HUTD. On 287 is the governor's recommended increase for State Patrol from the Trunk Highway Fund. And on 288 is the governor's recommended a change item for a purchase of a fixed-wing aircraft for the State Patrol. And then there's one only house-only provision on line 289, State Trooper Academy. This would be using funds from the Driver and Vehicle Services Fund for costs for for State Trooper Academy. Moving on then to line 300, the operating adjustment for commercial vehicle enforcement, that is taking governor's recommendation. And then on the next page, for capital security, this is all a general funded activity. On line 307 and 308, taking the governor's recommended changes from the original bill, there's a little bit of a difference, though, in that the governor's revised budget, the dollar figures switched a little bit between the operating adjustment, which is the base increase, and the specific change item for capital security. There's about a $20 million difference between the two that nets out to the same amount, except in fiscal 16, where the governor's revised budget is about $20,000 higher. So then the next change item is on line 315, and that is the governor's recommended change for vehicle crimes unit from the HUTD. And then moving on to driver and vehicle services, lines 330 to 332, those are all governor's recommended changes for vehicle services. And then on driver services, lines 341, 342 are governor's recommended changes for that, spending out of the driver services fund. And then a house-only change item on line 343 and 344 that eliminates the $1,000 a year in trunk highway fund spending and replaces it with driver vehicle services fund spending. And then two more governor's change items on line 357 and 364 for traffic safety and pipeline safety. And moving on to the last page of the appropriations section of the spreadsheet, line 376 is the reduction in MMB for tort claims, and that's picked up by MnDOT agency management in the Trunk Highway Fund. So that is all for appropriations. The next few pages of the spreadsheets are just change items only for summary purposes. But turning very briefly to page 17, these are revenue items. And the house changes are on line 542. The county's transit improvement board required to pay 100% of transitway operating costs for a subsidy. So that's just displayed there. It doesn't add to the total, but it is factored into the numbers for the Metropolitan Council appropriation. And then line 584, this is an estimated increase in revenue for increasing the penalty for texting while driving, the second and subsequent offenses. Line 549 is increasing the state trooper escort rate, which was the governor's recommendation. And then line 550 and 551 is expected revenue loss from the Vehicle Services Fund and the HUTD as a result of legislation in the bill pertaining to driveway in-transit plates. And then on the last page of the spreadsheet is a summary of general fund appropriations. And I will just note on line 582, if you could cross out budget for fiscal 15, that actually that line is actually changes for against the base for all years. And I will note that on line 582 under FY 2015 plus changes, the 228 is the one-time general fund spending from fiscal year 2015. So that, Mr. Chair and members, is the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. You have a well-versed knowledge about all of these dollars. It's a lot to keep track of, so thank you. Representative Howson, did you have another question?
If I could.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lee, I saw another spreadsheet, and maybe that was approaching that whole package of the transportation funding that reflects the borrowing, the trunk highway bonds and GO bonds. Would any of that be on here?
Mr. Lee?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, on page... yes, on page 4, line... ...121 is the additional debt service to pay $1.3 billion worth of trunk highway bonds authorized over 10 years. And this estimate is from the Minnesota Department of Management and Budget. 7 years, I'm sorry.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could...
Representative Houseman.
So this only does the trunk highway bonding. It doesn't show the GO bonding.
Mr. Lee.
Correct. Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, there is no general obligation bonding in House File 4DE2.
Just that was proposed in the bigger package. So the question then about the trunk highway bonding, I sort of recalled your other spreadsheet showed it out to 2020. By that time, we were paying about $110 million. Was it a year or biennium for debt service?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, I believe that was about a year. The general rule, and depending on interest rates at the time of the bond sale, is that it's about 10 to 1. So about $1 billion worth of trunk highway bonding would equate to about $100 million in debt service costs. But that is only after all of the bonds are both issued and sold. And it would take quite a while for those to all ramp up. So it would be higher in the out years.
Representative Houseman.
Mr. Chair, if I could, does the debt service to repay trunk highway bonds come out of the trunk highway fund or the general?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, it would come out of the trunk highway fund.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you.
Chair Kelly, did you have any comments before we turn over to Mr. Barris?
No, I think we'll excuse me. We'll start with the presentation of the bill then.
Okay. I'm sorry, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm new to this committee, and I'm having a little trouble, frankly, keeping up with some of the spreadsheets and trying to figure this out. I may have to spend some time with somebody afterward. So there's the term shift is used 46 times in the bill. And how do I find out the total of those 46 shifts from the general fund? I assume that's where they're shifting. Most of them are shifting from or to. Where is that on? I assume it's someplace here evident, and I'm just having a hard time.
Mr. Lee.
Finding that.
So, Representative Norton, if you go to the trunk highway fund balance spending sheet, that's the single page.
Okay.
on lines 20 and 21, those are the amounts that are moving from Trunk Highway that are now being funded by the, that would propose to be funded by the general fund for fiscal 18 and 19. And then in terms of spending that is currently in the general fund that would be moving to either HUTD or special transportation funds, if you go to the first single page spreadsheet that's titled House File for DE2 Tax and General Fund Items. On line 8 of that, ongoing above base general fund tax items only, the 411 for fiscal 16-17 is all of the general fund, the items that are taking from the general fund to move into transportation funds.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Burris. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Bernardi has a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question just to gain a little bit of understanding. So if you, for example, on the Trunk Highway Fund balance spending spreadsheet, line 20 says MnDOT agency management shift. So that's coming, it's going to be general fund money now rather than a statutory Trunk Highway appropriation. Can you tell me what the difference is? And then my second question was, does that, there's no increase in 2019, so does that mean, you know, the agency has to, you know, cut or reduce spending? Go ahead.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, that represents funds that a piece of MnDOT is currently funded with Trunk Highway funds as a direct appropriation, meaning that the legislature has to appropriate it every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And what this would effectively do is move that base amount from being a Trunk Highway funded component and turn it into a general fund component and use the subsequent dollars that are since freed up from the Trunk Highway fund and spend it on state roads. So it would be increasing the base for the Transportation Committee for general fund spending in 18-19, and then, you know, using the subsequent constitutionally dedicated dollars of the Trunk Highway Fund for state roads.
Okay.
And Representative
then
Bernardi.
Thank you. And then my follow-up question, if it stays constant from 2018 to 2019, being its agency management shift, generally, you know, cost of living increases or those kinds of things, if it stays flat, then that means there is no increase to the agency, and they have to figure out what to do?
Mr. Lee.
Representative, or Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, that's correct. Essentially, it is at the flat base level.
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi?
That was fine.
Any other questions before we move on? All right. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, Matt Burris with House Research. I'll start with Article 2 of the bill language. Article 1 contains the appropriations, and quite a few of the change items and riders were discussed in Mr. Lee's walkthrough. And Mr. Lee also touched on Trunk Highway bonding. And I'll just provide a little bit more on that before going into the transportation policy and finance provisions. So Article 2 contains a $1.3 billion Trunk Highway bonding authorization, and that is spread over 7 years. And as Mr. Lee mentioned, it's at $200 million a year and then cut in half. That's $100 million for the final year. And that is allocated between three different programs. The first,
Mr. Burris, can you hold on a second? Just for everybody, that would start on, I believe, on page 22, for those that are looking for it. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair and members, I'm indeed on 22, actually going to page 23 is the beginning of the substantive language around the bonding appropriations. And so the first of the three funded areas for MnDOT through the Trunk Highway bonds is the Corridors of Commerce program. This is funded at $125 million per year. And with each of these, again, it's in the last year of the cycle, it's at half. So in fiscal 2022, it's $62.5 million. And this is for the Corridors of Commerce program. There's also some language specifying project selection criteria for both within the metropolitan district of MnDOT and separate criteria for outside of the metropolitan area. The second of the programs funded is the TED program, Transportation Economic Development. That's at $5 million a year. And then the remainder, the third, is for general state road construction activities, and that's at $70 million each year. There's also a provision on cancellations, which just refers to unused funds and when the timer starts for when MnDOT counts those funds.
I think we do have a question. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Burris, I have a question about the language associated with the corridors of commerce outside of the metropolitan district. Lines 23.30 moving into the next page, 24 through 24.2. And it looks like there's new criteria being added to how the funds are spent. How does this interface with the criteria that was established in statute in 2013?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, this would be additional criteria for use of these funds on top of what's in place in statute. And it the language here lays out the first selection of projects. So this criteria would, in effect, overrule some of the criteria to the extent that some of the criteria that are already in statute to the extent that there's a conflict. But I would note that the project selection requirements that are established in this rider refer to projects that have already been selected under the Corridors of Commerce program and have been funded for some of the initial steps in Corridors of Commerce kind of project development. So it's uncompleted projects that have already received funding for right-of-way acquisition, design, or environmental analysis. So some of the initial project development steps have already been funded, and the type of project has to essentially be some form of capacity expansion.
And I think, Representative Johnson, just a second, I think one of the questions that he had was what is the terminology of what has been started? Because sometimes things get put into very segmented sections of completion, and I think the question is where, which one of those to qualify if some sections of that project haven't been completed yet. And do you have any clarification on that?
Mr. Chair, I think there are two ways to look at that kind of segmentation question. One is sometimes projects over a stretch of road get broken up into phases or completely separate segments where a interchange or a bypass is treated as a separate piece from other segments and dealt with from initial engineering and land acquisition through design, through construction as something separate. Conceptually, it might be connected because the next section is the same stretch of highway, it's just up the road a little ways. A second way of looking at this kind of segmentation is the project development steps. And so the initial steps are around kind of feasibility analysis, preliminary engineering, preliminary design, final design, land acquisition, and all of those are all of the project development work that happens before a project is actually constructed. And the Corridors of Commerce program has, based on some statutory direction and in a funding from last year, includes a couple of projects where the funding was just for some of those preliminary steps. And this rider would seem to have the effect of requiring continuation of those projects that have already received some preliminary development funding.
I'll turn it back to Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So am I to understand that a project that did not have any design funds currently appropriated would not be able to be funded based on this language?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that project would be next in line after any project that fits this criteria. So if the dollars were sufficient to complete all the projects that have already gotten, say, design funds and land acquisition funds, if all those could be completed and there were additional dollars available, then it would kind of drop back to the criteria and selection process that MnDOT has in statute and is set up through its program development for this program.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, again. And then am I to understand that would be over the end? This is, am I correct, this is a seven-year plan basically for the corridor, so that would be for the entire 7 years?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, a seven-year program, and this would apply for each of the appropriations over those years.
Representative Johnson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hate to belabor this, but this is, you can appreciate this, Highway 14 is involved here because there's funding, there's design funding for the interchange at 14 and 15 outside of New Ulm, but there is no design funds or land acquisition for the four-lane between Nicollet and New Ulm. And so if I want to make sure I'm reading this, if there's not enough money left over from the projects that are already have the design or the engineering or the right-of-way acquisition, if there's not sufficient funds, there wouldn't even be money for the design for the four-lane from Nicollet to New Ulm?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think that's a fair assessment with respect to the funds under the Corridors of Commerce program.
Thank you.
Mr. Burris, if you'd like to continue.
And then, Mr. Chair and members, I'll go on to Article 3. And Mr. Lee had touched on the provisions in here, so I'll just briefly note where the language is. And Article 3 essentially lays out the sales taxes changes that Chair Kelly had indicated will actually be removed from this delete-all and move separately through the taxes committee. The first of these is in Section 2, and this is the allocation of motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue. The allocation is modified. You can see that there's language removed around the share that goes to the metro counties. That language is essentially reproduced later in the bill within the new Transportation Stability Fund that's being created. So, in effect, the change here would establish the fiscal 17 allocation of all of the motor vehicle lease sales tax dollars, but excluding legacy funds. So the dollars associated with the state's general sales tax as it applies to motor vehicle leases that are constitutionally dedicated to the legacy would continue to go towards the legacy funds. So the remainder would go to the counties in the metropolitan area and Greater Minnesota Transit. Section 3 contains three general sales tax provisions that are reallocations to transportation purposes. And these are dollars that, under current law, go into the general fund. Those three are the sales taxes on motor vehicle parts. And that's essentially the House File 215 language of Representative Howe. And then the other two pieces are the rental motor vehicle sales taxes, which Mr. Lee had mentioned they're kind of two components. One is the general sales tax, that's the 6.5% rate, and then the 9.2% sales tax is the other piece of that. Sections 4, 5, and 6 and 7 refer to the county's Transit Improvement Board and contain provisions that are also found in House File 899. This was a Representative Runbeck bill. The essence of these changes is to create a definition of transit ways for the local option sales tax authorization that under which CTIB was established. It also expands the permissible uses of these sales tax dollars to include general operating assistance for bus and as well as for arterial bus rapid transit. There's no further requirements around that, so this is the permissive language. That's at 29.29 to 29.30. And then Section 6 contains the requirement that CTIB use its funds first towards debt service, that's current law, and then second, covering all of the operating and capital maintenance costs for transit ways that CTIB had previously funded. And then Section 7 contains a repealer on the supplement versus supplant question with respect to the local option sales tax dollars. And then Article 4, Mr. Chair and members, contains a number of omnibus policy and finance provisions. And I'll walk through those next. The first piece of this is found in Sections 1 and 2, and makes is one part of a change establishing a new account for transit capital in the metropolitan area. And these two provisions would add to the current process that's in place for capital requests. It's a requirement for agencies, and it's optional for state agencies. It's optional for local units of government to submit requests to the legislature around capital projects. And so this new funding stream, this Metropolitan Transit Capital Account, would be added to that to the provisions around submission of those requests. Section 3 contains the Transit Assistance Fund changes. This is what Mr. Lee had discussed with changing the appropriations for both the Greater Minnesota and Metropolitan Area Transit accounts to be direct appropriations, so part of each biennial budget instead of the current statutory appropriation framework where the spending authority for both MnDOT with respect to the Greater Minnesota Transit and the Met Council is ongoing. So it eliminates the ongoing spending authority and also sets base appropriations to be the amount that's available in the account for each year. So all of the funds available in the account become the base when the subsequent budgets are being developed for future biennia. Section 4 contains the establishment of the new Transportation Stability Fund. And a couple of the accounts are essentially pass-through accounts. So the dedicated or the reallocated, depending on how you look at it, I guess, state sales taxes flow through a couple of these accounts and then on. With respect to the as Mr. Lee mentioned, the state sales tax on auto parts, that would go through the highway allocation account, but then it immediately goes from here into the highway user tax distribution fund. That's the same with a similar transit account. In subdivision 5 is the allocation language that's being reestablished. This is essentially moved from the motor vehicle lease sales tax section and into this account, and is the same structure of funds being allocated based on population to each of the counties in the metropolitan area, but except for Hennepin and Ramsey. So this was a proposal that the committee had heard, and the bill was sent on to taxes. Section 5 is one of a series or a number of agency provisions, so it's found in the governor's budget. And MnDOT had done a presentation at one point that laid out a number of the proposals of the governor. That was more in a PowerPoint format. So this reflects the language. The language is also found in House File 847, which contains the governor's budget and finance and policy provisions. So the first of these is on software sales, and it would provide for the deposit into the trunk highway fund instead of into a minute operating fund. Any funds from sale or licensing from software that MnDOT creates. So if MnDOT makes money off of their software, it would go into the trunk highway fund instead of to minute, essentially. Section 6 and 7 are provisions also from the governor's budget around appraisals as a precursor or preliminary step in the eminent domain process. And this would allow creation of a minimum damage acquisition report instead of having to go through a full appraisal. And that would apply for properties that are valued at less than $25,000. And then Section 8 contains Representative Drazkowski's House File 1822 prohibition on MnDOT using providing or establishing any aesthetic enhancements in projects if it increases the highway or bridge project total costs. This has a slight change from the version discussed in committee. Section 9 is one of a couple of agency policy provisions from the MnDOT housekeeping bill, and this relates to drainage and would have the effect of including cities in a requirement that landowners obtain a permit for drainage that would connect their drains or ditches to the highway right-of-way. Section 10 is another of the governor's bill provisions. It contains a couple of modifications from the original House File 847. And this creates a requirement that some counties and cities or counties and towns would need to do an inventory of traffic signals that's under their jurisdiction. But this applies just to higher volume roads. So there's a vehicle counts per day threshold, and it would be only on arterial roadways. Well, either of those requirements are met, so cities would need to create a inventory, and based on that inventory, develop a plan to optimize their traffic signals, and submit information to MnDOT around progress in implementing that plan. Section 11 contains a provision from Representative Torkelson's House File 1415, and this lays out a permit for use of the road right-of-way to lay down pressurized flexible force mains for transporting manure to apply onto fields. And this version is modified from the original House File as it had been heard in committee, and it lays out a couple of the criteria around what the permit owner would need to, what requirements the permit owner would need to meet. Section 12 is a new provision that reflects part of the budget language of the earlier discussion in Article 1. This creates a forecasted base from the Trunk Highway Fund. Currently, Trunk Highway Fund, under the structure that's been in place for transportation budgets, the Trunk Highway Fund appropriations follow a base based on whatever was set in the previous budget. And this provision would create a forecasted base so that all of any additional revenues coming into the Trunk Highway Fund would be added into the base for two of the budgetary activities within MnDOT. The bulk of the funds would go towards state road construction, but then a portion of the funds would go towards general operations and maintenance. And that general operations and maintenance amount is essentially based on a price deflator, so it would reflect growth in costs. So O&M, operations and maintenance, would increase based on this a proportional share using the percentage that is the cost growth calculation, and any other additional funds to the Trunk Highway Fund would go towards state road construction. So Mr. Lee touched on how the appropriation that's in the budget currently, one of the funding sources for state road construction is use of the unreserved fund balance. This would eliminate all but 1% of the total forecasted revenues from that fund balance. So the fund balance would essentially be would be minimized. The dollars would instead go towards state road construction. And I would note that there also, under MnDOT's policies and administrative procedures, there's a reserves component as well. So this doesn't drive the Trunk Highway Fund balance down to close to zero, because that reserves amount is somewhere in the order of $80 million a year. Section 13 contains another one of the governor's executive branch budget items.
Mr. Chairman, question?
Yes, Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where was that money going to be spent if it wasn't going to be spent on roads and bridges, that unreserved? Was there something going to be spent for something else besides that? Or
Mr. Burse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, it would be hard to score that as where it would go because it would just be sitting in the fund balance absent some sort of legislative activity to appropriate the dollars. In past years, when portions of the fund balance have gone towards a couple of governor's and agency initiatives, I think 2 years ago, the fund balance that was available was used towards additional snow and ice management costs that the agency had experienced. So the effect of this would be sort of directing it by default towards state road construction rather than it sitting on the bottom line and being available for a proposal by the legislature or the governor in a future year.
Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just, I suppose if we have a big reason to plow and buy salt, then the money wouldn't be there? Is that what we're saying or what?
Mr. Burse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, with specific to snow and snow plowing, there's another provision that'll get to later. But to the kind of more general question of would there be money if some unexpected thing comes up, there would be a couple of options under this language or under this bill were it enacted. One would be use of the reserves, which is, you know, largely designed toward for as being a funding stream for emergencies and unexpected events. A second would be a supplemental budget in which some other appropriation is reduced in order to accommodate additional spending for, you know, whatever unexpected item had come up.
Representative Earhart?
You know, Mr. Chairman, you don't mean an extra, we wouldn't have to tax anybody extra to do what that fund is doing if we didn't have that fund, though. I mean, if there's an emergency come along, we needed an emergency tax, or?
Mr. Burse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I guess that would be another option that someone in the legislature could propose, which is a tax in order to fund some emergency measure.
Representative Earhart?
Well, I'm just wondering, Mr. Chairman, that that money, as I understand it, was going to be spent on roads and bridges anyway, but now we're using it to buy roads and bridges, so I don't understand what we're doing here, really.
Mr. Burse or Chair Kelly? Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, if you go to the Trunk Highway Fund balance spending sheet.
Which one is that? One, two, or three?
Four.
That's what I was afraid of.
If you look on line 16 under the base budget box, you see unreserved fund balance, and in fiscal 16, it's $158 million, going up to $584 million in fiscal 19. So that's essentially where the unreserved fund balance is. But if you look one line up, line 15 is the reserved fund balance. So that's per MnDOT's policy for contingency or for emergency situations, and also they need to have a certain amount in reserve for debt service requirements. What this proposal would in effect do is spend 90% of that on state road construction with the inflator for operations and maintenance and leave in the unreserved fund balance on line 16, if you look at the House proposal, $15 million in 16, $10.4 million in 17, and $11.5 million in 18, and so forth. So essentially, Representative Earhart, you're right in that this Trunk Highway Fund money could only be spent on Trunk Highway Fund you know, related items such as state road construction or MnDOT agency management or Department of Public Safety, State Patrol. But essentially, the current system allows for a fund balance to build absent a legislative appropriation for it. And what this change would do is, rather than have that balance build, it would automatically build into a forecasted base that this money was going to be spent on state roads construction anyway.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think you ever would see an unreserved fund balance of the amount that you are showing here, because it would have been spent from year to year. So you would not see $584 million sitting in a pot.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, that's correct in that that is just the base. So after the changes, if you look at the House box, rather than being $584 million in fiscal 19, it would be $12.1
million. If I could clarify, Representative Earhart, I think what you see in unreserved fund balance in fiscal year 16 and 17 are the actual dollars that are sitting in reserve right now without a change that this bill would provide. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, if I could correct one piece of that. That is not, in a sense, money in the bank. That's forecasted money.
Right, exactly.
Unappropriated.
Well, even, Mr. Chairman, if you were forecasting it, you would not leave it sit there. And if you look back at a history outside of 16, 17, and what you think is going to be there in 18 and 19, you would not find, I don't think, most anywhere $584 million or anywhere near that amount, because it actually is being spent, rolled forward, and spent. But that's you'd have to ask MnDOT for the actual figures on that.
Either
I think
one
we're
of you?
Conjuring up something that may be a little smoke here, but whatever.
Mr. Lee or Mr. Burris on that one? Any other comments? Chair Kelly, do you have a comment?
No, just that this is part of the planning, just directing the funds that actually have not been spent and allocated. I would remind Representative Earhart, this is also part of the governor's proposal as well. This is part of budgeting that directs these funds, as opposed to them having to come back to us and get approval to actually utilize those funds now. So we're just suggesting that these funds were originally forecasted to be used for Trunk Highway. We want them to be used for roads and bridges.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, are you making a blanket appropriation of any future funds that might be in the unreserved fund balance to be spent, or are we going to appropriate this money, which we normally would do?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, this does not include an appropriation. It's setting the base, so it would still be up to the legislative process and the, you know, the creation, the enactment of a budget that does the appropriations. Perhaps one other way of looking at this is this change would set the intended use of the available fund balance dollars, or what would have been fund balance dollars, to go towards state road construction, as opposed to any of the other types of functions and activities of the Department of Public Safety or of MnDOT.
Well, Representative Earhart, follow up.
Mr. Chairman, I just think that you're doubling down on something that's already going to happen anyway by pretending that money would sit there forever and nothing would be done about it. But that's just a passing observation.
Thank you. I think we have another question from Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before we leave, Article 4, Section 12, it is a fascinating read. But I would specifically just be curious about lines 3726 to 3729. The percentage under paragraph C, clause 1, equals the annual state and local government deflator for the most recently available year, less the annual state and local government deflator for the prior year, divided by the annual state and local government deflator for the prior year. Can anyone help me understand why are we right? I mean, this is all new language. Section 12 is all new language. Is there any way that could have been written in a way that...
How transparent do you want to be?
is there any less incomprehensible way that could have been written?
Mr. Lee or Mr. Burris?
I mean, why did we choose those? It's just so hard for me to understand why we chose these words.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I'm not sure that I have a good answer for you other than to express kind of the general, a couple of general drafting philosophies or things that I've seen as just more general observations. And one of those is that sometimes accuracy and clarity from a technical standpoint for agencies to administer a provision requires language that's less intuitive to a lay reader. And sometimes that that there can be a trade-off or a tension. If that paragraph just read that the percentage must, you know, the percentage equals the growth in the deflator, it might be more intuitive that it's just, you know, increased in at a percentage that reflects the deflator, you know, the growth in costs. But by actually establishing the calculation of how you calculate percentage change, you perhaps, in for a lot of readers, lose, you know, ease of comprehension but gain technical accuracy. So this might be an example of the trade-off that can occur with that.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you.
Okay, I think, Mr. Burris, I think we're ready for you to continue.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the next section is Section 13. This, again, is part of the governor's budget, and this would provide additional authority for MnDOT to more actively manage its lands and undertake sales and leasing, and it would expand a current law statutory appropriation of the funds that result from that active management. So MnDOT would be able to use those funds to as the revenue stream for the management activities. Sections 14, 15, and 16 are part of the agency housekeeping bill, and this was House File 1715. And this makes a couple of clarifying changes in subcontracting goals for MnDOT's small targeted group business program and veteran-owned small business program. I don't, if you may recall, the testimony around this centered around clarifying issues that the agency is seeking with how subcontracting goals are waivers from goals in subcontracting are tied to good faith effort. So it's not two separate steps, but all one step. Section 17 contains the Small Cities Assistance Program. The appropriations were touched on earlier, so this is the language establishing the program. This is similar to Representative Drazkowski's House File 1450 bill, but there are a couple of differences. And the essence of the difference centers around the distribution formula. That's in Subdivision 4. The distribution formula in the DE2 amendment has four components. The first is, and this is for determining how much aid each city gets. Just backing up a step, you may recall, this is aid that would go to those cities that are not receiving municipal state aid street funds because of the size of the city. So this is currently 706 cities would be eligible for the aid. The four distribution components are 5% going equally to each of the cities, 35% proportionally based on lane miles and municipal streets within each city, 35% proportionally, again, based on the population of each of those cities, and then the final component is 25%, that is a declining amount based on the lane miles of county state aid highway within each city. So as a city has more county state aid highway passing through it, the funding under this component would decrease. There's also a cap that any city can receive, and that's 3.5 times the average amount being provided to the cities, based on how, you know, whatever the appropriation level is for that year. I believe there's also a run on the dollars going to cities in your packet. This is a small cities aid model. It starts with a run summary and then it has a city-by-city listing. One thing I would note with that run is that this is an approximation. It uses data from previous year, not fiscal year 16. So this is designed to give a sense of how much each city would receive under the language, but is shouldn't be a prediction of the exact amount, because populations will change and the lane mile amounts change at least a bit, and there could be some data cleanup issues as well with identifying and calculating lane miles. So there are some caveats, in other words, to that run summary. Moving on then to section 18, this is from the Tice Bill House File 2053, and it would allow driveway in-transit license plates to be used out of state, as well as require that the business be located in Minnesota. This is for businesses that perform driveway or tow-away transit services using license plates that don't aren't specific to one vehicle. They are placed on vehicles as those vehicles are being transported. So this would provide for out-of-state use. Section 19 contains House File 533. This is a Representative Nash provision establishing a start scene motorcycles special plate. Section 20 is also a special license plate provision. This goes along with another section later in the bill. This is from Representative Sanders, House File 293. This would move up the implementation timeline for the $30 annual contribution on the Minnesota Gulf special plate, so that contribution would go into effect starting July 1 of 2015 instead of January 1, 2017. And then, Mr. Chair and members, section 21, if I am able to find it, I found it, it's on page 43, in case anyone else is having trouble. This establishes an additional penalty over and above the penalty that's set currently by the court system for texting while driving or other electronic communications. So this is Representative Hornstein's House File 1596. It's also similar to a provision in the governor's budget. Section 22 contains a House File 1646, Representative Schoen, provision expanding the number of headlamps that can be placed on a motorcycle from 2 to 4. And then sections 23 to 25 are from a Representative Sanders bill, House File 1160, and this modifies the reporting requirements for some commercial vehicles. So the inspections, commercial vehicle inspections would stay in place, but there'd be some changes in when a daily inspection report and pre-trip reporting would need to occur. And then section 26 contains House File 1159. This is from Representative Nash, and modifies the length limit for aerodynamic devices, aerodynamic tails that are placed on the end of semi-trailers to reduce wind drag. Sections 27 to 29 incorporate a couple of provisions from different bills, including or consisting of House Files 620 from Representative McNamara and House File 815 from Representative Dill. The substantive language is really in Section 29, which creates a qualifying products definition or category. And these would be the types of products that can be transported under the special overweight vehicles permit for 6 and 7 actual vehicles. So the list of qualifying products includes those transported that are already processed and being transported as a biofuel, as well as some livestock feed and fertilizer and highway and building construction materials. There's also in this provision some additional flexibility on use of the permit, so that multiple types of products could be transported under one permit rather than separate permits being required. Section 30 contains House File 526 provision from Representative McNamara, and this creates a motor vehicle weight limit exemption for portable toilet service vehicles. And then, Mr. Chair and members, Sections 31 and 32 are new language in the delete all, and this provision governs advertising devices and limitations on advertising that's visible from a trunk highway. And it would establish that electronic billboards, digital billboards that display static content digitally would not be prohibited if the digital content doesn't change any more often than once every 6 seconds. And my understanding is that that aligns with the current MnDOT policy on digital billboards. Section 33 is from a Representative Howe bill, House File 558, with a couple of small modifications. And this establishes a requirement for cities and counties and towns when receiving Safe Routes to School funds, so that the local unit of government has to require Safe Routes to School infrastructure on new subdivisions that are being developed. Section 34 contains a new provision in the budget, but it's actually pretty closely related to a provision of the governor's budget. This is creates a statutory appropriation for snow and ice management. And the way this statutory appropriation works is it doesn't kick in until the expenditure on snow and ice is 110% or higher of the direct appropriation, the budgeted amount provided in a budget. And if that's the case, then the MnDOT has spending authority under this appropriation out of the unappropriated reserves in the Trunk Highway Fund, and it would be up to 50% of those reserves. The other piece of this is found back in the Article 1 appropriations. And you may recall Mr. Lee had touched on how the snow and ice appropriation is split out from the rest of operations and maintenance. And so this would be tied to that new base appropriation for snow and ice management. And in the rider language, there's some flexibility built in for MnDOT to transfer funds between the general operations and maintenance and the snow and ice. And so you might note that this statutory appropriation kicks in at 110% and higher. Between 100%, well, 100% would be what the appropriation is. Between that and up to 10% over, so up to that 110%, there's some transfer between the general operations and maintenance and the snow and ice. So essentially a little bit of overage on snow and ice could be covered from general operations and maintenance. If the overage as far as snow and ice management costs is too high, it would instead come from the reserves in the Trunk Highway Fund. Section 35, as well as 36 and 37 and 38, as well as a couple other sections later in the bill, are coming from House File 899, which is a runback provision or set of provisions on transit finance. Sections 35 and 36 establish a clarifying cross-reference. So the actual substantive language is really in Section 38. And what that does is require that both MnDOT and the Met Council, as well as other local units of government, would need to get a would not be able to complete the alternatives analysis or select an alternative on a guideway project, so a capital-intensive type of transitway project, unless a law has been enacted that either specifies the project or that provides funds for the project. So the types of projects that are being limited are is essentially established in Section 37 through a definition change to a guideways development report. So this would be passenger rail, light rail, commuter rail, express bus service if it's operated in a primarily in a dedicated right-of-way, as well as highway bus rapid transit and multimodal stations that serve any of those other, at least two of those types of lines. Sections 39 and 40 come from House File 1744, which is a ward, Representative Ward bill. And one's for intrastate and one's for interstate operation, which prohibits carriers from operating if they've received a federal out-of-service order. And then Section 41 comes from House File 1573. This was a Department of, actually, just backing up a sec, Section 39 and 40 were a Department of Public Safety agency bill. And then Section 41 is as well. Section 41 is on the permits for escorts going along who provide lead and trailing car escort service for overdimensional loads. And this establishes that only this permit is necessary for the escort service. Section 42 is part another provision, part of the governor's budget, and this would allow the state patrol to set its costs for providing vehicle escorts rather than the cost being set in statute and being adjusted through future legislation. The state patrol would have authority to recover actual costs. Section 43 is another governor's budget provision, and this would provide MnDOT with more flexibility in setting the local contribution rate for projects that are state or federally funded in airport construction, hangar construction, other projects around airports. So instead of the, generally instead of the 20% local match, MnDOT would be able to adjust that. And then section, I think we are up to section 44, now on page 54, is another of the legislative authorization provisions. So again, this is a cross-reference clarifying which units of government the legislative authorization requirement is in place for. Section 45 is from it's modified from a Representative Runbeck bill, House File 195, and this gets back to what Mr. Lee was discussing with the general fund base for the Metropolitan Council. This establishes the calculation in determining what the base level is. So it's taking the base for this that's currently in place for the 16-17 budget, and then subtracting off growth in MVEST as well as the additional funds that CTIB is required to put towards transit operating. In effect, the base general fund base for the tails after the upcoming biennium would be zero. Section 46 makes a change to the Transportation Advisory Board of the Met Council. It would keep the same number of appointees, but one of the public transit representatives would be appointed by the Suburban Transit Association. So the suburban transit providers essentially would pick one of the TAB members. And that comes from a Representative Lewin bill, House File 1525. Section 47 is another piece of House File 195, the runback provision, and this would prevent the Metropolitan Council from bonding against its motor vehicle sales tax revenue. And then Section 48 is another of the cross-reference legislative authorization provisions. Section 49 modifies the requirements around who is supposed to pay for light rail transit operating, so that 100% of the operating costs, as well as ongoing maintenance costs, would be required to come from non-state sources. So the general fund and motor vehicle sales tax would not be permissible funding sources. This works in conjunction with the in some ways, with the CTIB requirement of funding the 100% of the operating costs of transitways that that CTIB had previously funded. Section 50 contains a repeal of a sunset on mini trucks operation. So under current law, absent any change, the local special permits for mini trucks would no longer be valid beginning August 1, 2015. And this would establish mini truck authorization. It would indefinitely make that that authorization allowed. Section 51 is the other piece of the Minnesota Gulf license plate contribution date change. And then Section 52 is language from the original House File 4 directing MnDOT for each of the years of the upcoming budget biennium to implement some of the efficiencies that came out of a 2008 task force report. And the efficiency amount is set at 15% of the fiscal year 14 and 15 appropriations. And the funds that are freed up as a result of the efficiency savings are directed towards highway construction and maintenance efforts. Sections 53 and 54 contain trunk highway turnback provisions. So this would be transfer of the jurisdiction of a couple of segments of trunk highway to go from being on the trunk highway system to being under the jurisdiction of counties, Otter Tail County, and the other one, Section 54, is part of the governor's it's part of one of the MnDOT budget, MnDOT bills, House File 1715. Section 55 is also a governor's provision. It comes out of the governor's budget that would direct MnDOT to consult with local units of government and create a local cost participation policy that's revised and is designed to minimize some of the costs of local units of government. Section 56 contains a legislative report, and this comes out of House File 1856, the Representative Fenton bill on safety interchange improvement in the Interstate 94, 694, 494 interchange. So that's the improvements study. Section 57 is also a legislative reporting requirement on a title transfer fee, which is a $10 fee that's placed on title transfers. And it's a requirement of reporting by the Pollution Control Agency. And the title transfer fee provision is not actually in the titling and registration chapters. It's over in the pollution control chapters. So the report would require looking at the policy rationale behind the fee, identify uses of funds, and report back to the legislature. And then Section 58 contains a public-private partnerships pilot project provision. This is substantially similar to House File 1924, Representative Kelly bill. There are a couple of changes. A little bit is structural, but there are some additional limitations that are in this version. One is that the total project cost estimate of the project can't exceed $100 million. A second is that if the agreement with a private entity includes some sort of transfer of owner, temporary transfer of ownership or control, that transfer can only be for up to 25 years. And then the final section is a repealer. It's section 59, and that is another piece of the governor's budget and would repeal a provision that governs interagency agreements. So under this language that's being repealed right now, the Department of Public Safety can enter into interagency agreements for capital security costs around the Capitol complex. So this would be one piece of a structural change in which the funding for capital security would come through direct appropriations as opposed to agreements funding through fees paid by all the capital security complex tenants.
Thank you,
Mr. Bill. Mr. Chair is the walkthrough of the DE bill.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. And again, just like Mr. Lee, you are very knowledgeable with all of this data and information, and I thank you for sharing that expertise with us and running through the bill. With that, I will open up again to questions by the committee. If you have any other questions of Mr. Burris or Mr. Lee. Chair Kelly, do you have any final comments about this particular bill presentation?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, thank you to Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris, and thank you to the committee members. This is the first step in our process. We'll be walking through this tomorrow, hearing from testimony from the public, and then we'll also be looking at amendments and finalizing the bill on Monday. So I look forward to the process. It looks like we do have a couple other questions, though, Mr. Chair.
I think we do have a few more, Chair. And well, I have Chair Hornstein and Chair Earhart.
You, Mr. Chair. It's not a question to the bill. I mean, we'll have plenty of time to debate it. I just want to make sure that members of the public know exactly when and where the hearing will be tomorrow and, you know, how long it will go and will there be opportunities. I mean, how long can people testify? The logistics of tomorrow was my question.
We'll be going through that before we finish today.
Okay.
And if there are other questions of the bill, then otherwise we'll go to the statistics of technological side of how this is going to be presented. Chair Art, did you have?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had a couple of questions from the two sitting next to me, and I couldn't find it in the bill. There was a line, I thought, for some money for Rochester and one for Highway 14, but can you point that out for me where those are?
Was that a real question, or is that just facetious?
Rhetorical.
Oh, rhetorical. Representative Mason, did you have a question?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, just can you explain the last piece that you were talking about, the repealer?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, current law allows the Department of Public Safety to enter into agreements with all the tenants in the Capitol complex where the tenants pay a fee, and that covers part of the costs of Capitol complex security. So the repealer would eliminate that authority, and that kind of has the effect of creating a hole in the funding amount. So part of the concept would presumably be funding capital security through other appropriations or through other means rather than through the interagency agreement structure.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that means somewhere along the line we need to deal with that loss of revenue.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, it is actually a change item in the House budget, and it's a governor's change item as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions before we get on to the procedures? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is just a request for some time. I don't think anyone will have the information now, but we do seem to be taking, in some language of this bill, money from regular bus service and giving it to Suburban Transit Association. And I've tried to figure out what is that dollar amount. And, I mean, I'm assuming it would have in effect some cut then to regular bus service as opposed to. So somewhere, sometime before we get to final passage, it would be helpful. I don't think anybody will have that today.
Thank you. I think we'll keep that under advisement. Thank you so much. Okay, if there are no other questions, just kind of lay out sorry, Representative Horstein.
Just one quick comment. As you lay out the public involvement piece, which has historically been very important to the development of this bill, I hope people are very aware that again, we'll have plenty of time to critique and debate this, but as we've seen today, there's some very, very radical policies in this related to transit in terms of changing policies that I think are, I find, hugely problematic. So I hope that the public will be here tomorrow to discuss this. And so this is why I think it's so important that we lay out exactly the parameters of the discussion and the debate about this bill. But I think this is an area of concern in particular. So
thank you. And with that, it is time for us to go over. And Chair Kelly, did you want to do that, or do you want me to do this?
Go ahead.
Currently, the way it is set up, that we will be meeting tomorrow, Thursday, at our regular time start of 12:45 until 3:15 in the basement. And the reason why we can't go any longer than 3:15 is we do need to. We have other committees and floor session, as well as we have the State of the State address tomorrow night as well. So that limits the amount of time that we can meet tomorrow. And we are asking that if you have and wish to be testifying tomorrow, if you could please let the staff know, Mr. Marble here or Ms. Cicchini, did I say that right? All right. To do that, we're asking that you limit your testimony to 3 minutes if possible, and no more than two people from the same organization, just because we do need to get through more. Following that, amendments will be due by Friday at noon for this. So tomorrow we're just hearing testimony. We'll still be hearing again about amendments later, but amendments will be then due by noon on Friday. And then Monday we will be meeting at noon, running till 3:15 in room 5 for amendments to the bill as well. So there's a lot of opportunity for us to be involved. But to go over that again, tomorrow from 12:45 to 3:15 in the basement. We'll be meeting for testimony, 3 minute maximum time in order to be able to get through everybody. And then amendments due Friday at noon, followed by a meeting at noon on Monday in room 5 to hear all of those amendments. Is that clear? Did everybody hear that? We appreciate that, and with that, I think we are actually done a little bit early today. So thank you for your attendance, and meeting is adjourned.